Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
I'm at the foot of the ladder. The lamb foot beds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches.
The Taliban now control more territory in Afghanistan than at any time since the war started.
One giant leap for mankind.
Ah, are you old enough to remember that? Are you old enough to remember that? And if you're not, you probably have heard those words and probably seen some film. Here we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Apollo landing this year. And Paul Kinzer with us in the studio now to talk about what's going on in the sky. Maybe we'll talk a little about the moon and the moon landing maybe with him. But we can also talk about a lot of other things as well. Paul is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club, also has a portable planetarium and does shows all over the state. So great to have him back. It's always fun for me to talk with him, and I bet it's fun for you to listen to him as well. We'll talk about those space missions, images taken of a black hole. That's something else we can talk about. What'd you see and what to see in the night sky this time of the year? I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments. Maybe you got a photo to share with us at 1-800-642-1234. That's how you call. You can send your questions or maybe a photo as well to ideas@WPR.org. Paul Kinzer, welcome back.
Oh, it's always great to be here.
What did that moon, that mission mean to you, that moon mission?
I don't think I can really express it. I turned 9 the next month. So I was just at the ripe age where that was just, I work with kids now and I say, if there's a musician and an athlete and, you know, whoever you think is amazing, I don't think it compares because they were on TV a lot. They could do things most humans couldn't, and they did. I mean, and the images, people off the planet. It hadn't happened before. It's people sort of take it for granted now, but every mission, they were doing something new that had never been done before. Oh. I lived for it. It meant a great deal.
And talk about those astronauts were kind of like the rock stars of the time, too.
And you know, they're NASA did a good job of public relations.
Yeah.
I mean, they really gave us a lot of information that made them seem heroic, and a lot of them, it was very, very accurate for all of them for the missions they did. We didn't hear any of the negative about them. They were, like you say, they were superstars.
China has an unmanned lander on the far side of the moon right now.
Yeah.
Any information on that?
Well, it's sad, the politics that get involved,
yeah.
But they share a fair amount, but they don't share a lot with us. And, you know, there's sort of a space race going on again. But, yeah, they were the first. They've landed a lander on the other side of the moon. And the far side of the moon is an interesting place. First, there is no dark side. All the moon gets lit. There's a day and a night, but the day and the night each last 2 weeks. But when they're on the far side, communicating with Earth is very difficult because there's a big giant rock in the way called the moon. So they need to have an orbiting craft up in the sky above the moon to bounce signals off of. So it's much more difficult. And to land a lander successfully there, good for them.
Yeah, good for them.
And there are quite a few lunar missions coming up. The moon somehow dropped out of favor for a while, but now...
Yeah, NASA has a bunch of plans, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of plans. And again, politics, you know, when every year a new budget gets approved, plans that might be a decade out because it takes a while to plan and to build and to train and all that. Funding gets re-added, then it gets cut, and then it gets put back, and it can get in the way. But things are moving along.
You know, you mentioned something like 10 years for the moon, possibly. I'm thinking about Mars. Sending people to Mars has been talked about for a long time.
Yeah. It's interesting. My son and I at a garage sale, we found the copy of National Geographic about that original moon landing from 1969, and they had an article in there, What Next? And they said we'd be to Mars by 1985, have humans on Mars. And they had the plans to do it. It wasn't pie in the sky. If they had spent the way they spent on Apollo, maybe it would have happened. But going to Mars is going to be vastly more difficult. It's 150 times farther than the moon.
Yeah.
And you'll have to take everything with you. If one, you know, I'm imagining one of them or more will have to be a doctor, because what if somebody gets sick? It's going to be
you're
going to
need a plant specialist, horticulturist of some sort.
Yeah, that's right. You're going to have to, you couldn't bring enough food because you're going to be gone for a long time. So they're going to have to make their own food. I find it fascinating. I'm not sure. I mean, going to Mars because we can. I have my own opinions. I like asteroids. So,
Tina in Delavan has something for us. Tina, did I pronounce your name right, or is it Tina?
Tina.
Tina, all right, good. I had it right the first time. What's on your mind?
I live in just outside of Williams Bay, Wisconsin, and Yerkes Observatory is closed down.
Yeah.
Okay. The, I believe Lake Geneva is fighting for it, and Williams Bay, the town of Williams Bay is fighting for it. I think it's terribly sad that I understand, I believe there was not enough people. The same people were always, you know, working there. And I just think it's sad that the Yerkes closed down. It's not publicly, you know, to where people can go in. They have programs that they do offer. I didn't get to go any of this to this year. But they don't. It's not like it used to be. And I think it's sad that that's going to waste with all the astronomy and everything. You know, that we had the eclipse. We had a big thing with the eclipse there, and I got to sit there where Albert Einstein came and stayed and, you know, was in the observatory. I hold that very dear to my heart, like when I seen the Grand Canyon. But I just can't believe that
You're probably Tina. You're not the only one.
Yeah, I feel very I don't know what the word is, terrible, because I'm not originally from Wisconsin. I've lived here for years, and I've always planned to go to Yerkes. In fact, I knew the last education director there. She lived in my town for a while, and she invited me out there many times. And I just
never
I'll
got
get there.
There,
I'll get there, I'll get there. Yerkes, I am confident, you know, some people have said, oh, they're going to destroy that telescope and that observatory. It's the largest refracting telescope ever made. It's got a lens in it that's 40 inches across. You couldn't really make a bigger one. We don't need to get into the why. Now it's all reflectors that use mirrors, and that makes sense. But it's historically vital that that telescope not only not be destroyed, but it stays where it is. And I know there are a lot of people working to make that happen, and it hasn't happened yet. And the main story is it is, I believe, still owned by the University of Chicago, and because of light pollution and other things, it isn't doing astronomy anymore, and it's very expensive to maintain, and they decided they didn't want to do it anymore. So it's in limbo.
But they're working on it,
Tina.
They
are working on it, yeah. I'm confident something will happen.
Thank you for calling. Mike in Sheboygan, thank you for calling.
Hi, I just have two quick questions and then a comment. What's in the southern sky as far as the planets this time of year? I see a very bright star, and I don't know which ones there are, but my other question is, do you know anything about the planetarium up in Monaco, the Kovacs Planetarium, which is built by an amazing person, and I went up there about 4 or 5 years ago, and I haven't heard anything since. And my other question is, I'm a big advocate of a dark sky across Wisconsin. the best place I've ever seen a dark sky is in the Upper Peninsula, Michigan, on Copper Harbor, where you're surrounded by Lake Superior, and it is just an amazing dark sky location. I've been trying to encourage them to designate that as a national dark sky heritage, because it is just absolutely one of the best places in the Midwest to view stars.
Okay, first of all, the planets in the night sky, if you look in the south right now, and of course this will change because planets move. In fact, the word planet comes from an old word that meant traveler or wanderer. But if you look in the south right when it gets dark right now, there's a very bright white star, and that's the planet Jupiter. And then to its left, oh, I don't know, if you held your hand at arm's length maybe and spread your fingers to the left, there's a dimmer yellow star, and that's the planet Saturn. And down to the right of Jupiter is a reddish star that is a star. It's the star Antares, which means the rival of Mars because it's red. But it's quite a bright star that you might not notice, except that right now it's right near Jupiter. If you look at Jupiter with a pair of binoculars, if you can, especially if you can like balance them on your car or something, you can see four of its moons just with a regular pair of binoculars. And those moons are about the size of our moon, or a couple of them are bigger. And Jupiter's half a billion miles away.
And you could see it, too, with a telescope, the rings, couldn't you, with a telescope?
With Saturn? You can't see the rings with binoculars, but with even the smallest telescope, you can see the rings of Saturn. And Saturn's a billion miles away. And if we get time, one of the things I'd like to talk about, a mission that's been approved and might launch in 6 or 7 years, is the Titan Dragonfly. They're gonna send an octocopter to the moon Titan, which is just phenomenal to me. Titan is the biggest moon of Saturn, the only really large moon of Saturn, and it has, unlike any other moon in the solar system, it has an atmosphere. In fact, its atmosphere is thicker than ours, so helicopters will work really well there. Anyway, that's amazing to me. But your statement about dark skies, I absolutely agree. I try, but I don't have a whole lot of money, but I try each year to donate to the International Dark Skies Association. If you look that up on Google, they are the worldwide organization headquartered in Tucson, working to bring back the night, which we should all want to do, even if we're not into astronomy, because it's cheaper than lighting up the night. And lighting up the night is bad for us in many, many ways. So, yeah, and if you've never been under a truly dark sky, I encourage you find one, because
there's nothing.
Yeah,
go to the middle of the Shawamigan National Forest.
My family went to Itasca State Park in Minnesota this past a few weeks ago, and you know, just looking up, oh my goodness, it's just amazing.
Amazing.
It is. Yes,
we are talking today with Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics: Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, taking a look at the skies. With him today, certainly you can join in at 800-642-1234. Email a question or maybe a photo to ideas@WPR.org. Lee Rayburn, our engineer today, Jane Rotunda is our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You and I are getting an astronomy update today from Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. Call in at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@WPR.org. Let's take another call. Vern in Boyd, Wisconsin. It's your turn. Hi, Vern.
Oh, good morning. I got to keep it short, but I'll correct you. I got to correct you on one thing. The sky is actually white. Now, the reason we shouldn't go to the moon or Mars, too, the efficiency of rocket engines is only 2%. That's the maximum efficiency you get out of one delivable nozzle. Two, we have too much radiation in space for a trip to Mars. Manned flights are just economically infeasible. Going to the moon was a waste of money. We could have went there with the Saturn S1 4B. We didn't need the Saturn V.
No? Well, what do you think, Paul?
Well, I'm not an expert on rockets, so maybe you know more than me, but that's not my understanding, that to get the amount of equipment and all the things they needed to land the Saturn one was not big enough, but, you know, maybe no more than me. I almost agree that going to the moon was, I won't say a waste, but it didn't result in what I, as a kid, hoped. I thought it was going to be more about science, and they did do science, and especially on the later missions. I tell the kids they brought cars to the moon. Three cars. They're still there. I wonder if they still work. But there were important science things done, but they could, it's possible they could have been done by robots for a lot less. And this is an ongoing debate. Sending people, especially farther than the moon, is going to be extremely difficult and far more expensive than sending robots. And because we have such sophisticated robots now, I won't be in favor of spending more on manned missions than on robotic ones. But then people argue getting people up there gets people interested in space. When you have people up there, that's how you get the funding to get all the robots. So, and the telescopes up in space and things like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks, Vern. Appreciate it. Frank in Onalaska, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Frank.
Thanks for taking the call. So referencing the recent movie First Man, which focused on Neil Armstrong, what I'm reminded of is both in low technology and the danger and risk that all of the astronauts face, but particularly Armstrong. And, of course, the PR program that NASA had to speak to had to minimize all of that. But you think of how poor the technology was and the risk. I grew up reading a series of young adult stories about Mark Mars, the astronaut, as he flew the initial X-15 missions. And what that movie reminds us of, Neil Armstrong in particular, flew a lot of those missions and was close to death at least two or three times in his efforts to achieve what he accomplished. So that's what I reflect on at this point.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, and I mean, they knew what they were doing. That's the thing. A lot of people, you know, some people might argue they shouldn't have done it. They could have been killed. Well, some of them were killed.
Yeah.
I might tear up when I think of Apollo 1 and those three astronauts who burned to death. And they were friends with the other astronauts, including Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, who went to the moon just a couple of years later. They knew it was dangerous, and they did it anyway. That might be my definition of a hero.
Yeah. Absolutely. Frank, thank you. Let's take a call from Doug in Mount Horeb next. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Great program. I just wanted to follow up on the International Dark Sky Association and recommend that if folks are interested in having a dark sky area where they live, you can go there and get a model ordinance off their website, and you can take that ordinance to your town board or your village board or your city. And if you can get that passed, your area can become dark sky. I live in the town of Perry, about 20 miles west of Madison here, and we did that. And now we have our 6-mile by 6-mile town under a dark sky ordinance. So we've got 36 square miles of dark sky, and our folks are converting lights to down lights. And the sky is lighting up with stars and planets, and we've had a class out here from Middleton School that came out to do astronomy at the top of our Hauke Historic District Park, which is a high hilltop where you can see just about every star you want to. And the kids got off the out of their vehicles, and they walked out there in the dark and looked up, and the first thing they said was, "Oh my God, look at that."
Yeah.
I'd suggest going to the Dark Sky Association and picking up a model ordinance.
Oh,
I agree. And actually, there's so many things that you can get from them. They're a source for lots and lots of information about model ordinances. So, you know, boom, the words are right there. But also about why light pollution is a problem and what kind of lights are especially good or especially bad. And that's another thing that's really happened in the last several years. Lighting technology with LEDs. There are LEDs that can do wonders for the night sky, but unfortunately there are also LEDs that are being put up because they're so efficient, they don't cost much. There are some places that are making the night sky even brighter, and by brighter I mean brighter with light pollution. So yeah, it's an ongoing thing, but they do good work. Yeah.
Thank you, Doug, for calling. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234 with your questions or comments. We'll get you on pretty quickly. You know, the you brought a pretty nifty pair of binoculars today. I tried them out, and they don't magnify a lot, maybe double, but
yep,
they
yep.
they have other another feature. And you
yeah, I call these binocular, or I'm sorry, constellation binoculars. They don't magnify much. Through these binoculars, you can see the whole Big Dipper. You know, you're not zooming in on things. But what they do is they bring more light to your eyes, and that's, I mean, the reason I brought them is to talk a little bit about what telescopes do. And binoculars are telescopes. You're just putting two telescopes up to your eyes. Most people think that if you're going to get a pair of binoculars, what you want to look for is power. How much will it magnify? And that's not really what you should get. You should care about how much light do they bring in. Because the more light they bring in, the brighter the objects you're looking at are going to be, but also the sharper they're going to be. That's just, I don't even understand the physics of it, but it's true. If you have big lenses bringing light into your eye, you're going to see more detail. And so when if you were going to buy a telescope, the thing to look for, all other things being equal, is the biggest lens or mirror that brings in the light. And these have lenses that are 2 inches, a little more than 2 inches
yeah.
across, and they take light through that 2-inch lens, and they deliver it to your quarter-inch pupil in your eye, and they bring that light in there, and it is pretty amazing. You know, we've been talking about dark skies. I helped get an observatory, a public observatory, built in our school forest in our district over by La Crosse, north of La Crosse in the GET school district, and the skies are very dark out there. And the first time I brought these out there and looked up, I just thought, oh my gosh, I feel like skies are fairly dark here. I can see a fair amount of stars, but now I feel like I'm in the middle of Lake Superior, or I'm in a national forest or something, because they allow you to see what your eyes can't really pick up. And that's what telescopes do. And binoculars, regular binoculars are great, but these allow you to see a lot and to see it brighter and wide. So you can buy these commercially, but being who I am, I like to make things. These cost me maybe $40 to make, and to buy these is about $200. But
Money well spent, though.
Oh, yeah. They're an amazing thing. Yeah.
Oh, Paul Kinzer, our guest today. Great to have him with us. Brent from Waterloo emailed and wonders, will the International Space Station ever be visible to the naked eye during the day? And how do we measure distance for deep space, such as other galaxies further than Andromeda? Could the dark matter phenomenon affect how we measure distance?
I'm not sure about the last bit. I'm not an expert. I'm not actually a scientist. But dark matter is everywhere, although they're a little confused. They have found galaxies that don't seem to have any dark matter, and then they found other galaxies that are that have far more dark matter than others. But measuring distance in space, they have what they call standard candles. And there are a lot of them, and I won't go into detail because, again, I'm not a scientist, but there are certain types of stars that we know by their color, their brightness, and their variability. They grow and shrink in brightness. We know how big they are by their pulsations. So if we see one in a galaxy, a far distant galaxy, and we measure how bright it looks to our telescopes, we know how big and bright it actually is, so we can extrapolate from that and realize, well, if it's that dim, it must be this far away.
Mm.
And that's one way that they do it. Cepheid, I think they're called, because the first one was found in Cepheus. But, yeah, that's one of the ways that they do it. And there are other ways as well. Closer stars you can actually find using parallax. Like you can judge distance with your two eyes. Well, you can judge distance with the Earth on one side of its orbit, and then on its other side you can see the stars kind of move, and you can figure that out. I think there was another question, though.
And that had to do with the International Space Station.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know that you'll ever be able to see it during the day, although I suppose if you knew exactly where to look, the problem with it is, even though it's very bright at night because it's as big as a football field, it's as big as a football field, but it's 240 miles up. Yeah. So the only time I know that you can see it during the day, and I can't remember the web address of where you can go, but there's a place where you can go to find out where you have to be where its path will cross the sun. And there are people who set up their telescopes and they take video, and they'll hope they catch in their frames of their video, they hope they'll catch the International Space Station crossing the face of the sun. And you can find pictures of that. That's the only way I know you can see it during the day. Of course, at night, if you go to a website called heavens-above.com, that's heavens with a dash above, all one word, .com, you can enter your location there, and it'll tell you in the next, I think, week or 10 days when the International Space Station will pass over you at night. And it's not usually visible in the middle of the night. It's in the evening and the early morning, because what you're really seeing is the sun shining on it.
Yeah.
And if it's totally in the shadow of the Earth at midnight, you're not going to see it. But it is now the brightest thing in the sky after, or it can be the brightest thing in the sky after the moon.
Scott in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I'd like to suggest an app for your cell phone. You can, for people who are wondering what they're looking at in the sky, there's probably a few, but I use one called SkyMap. And you just open the app and aim your phone at what you're looking at, and it will tell you the planets, the constellation, the stars, everything like that.
Right. Yeah, there are.
It's a free app.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that one's free.
I have Star Tracker, and that one's free too.
And there are so many of them now. I don't have a smartphone. I still don't have a smartphone, but yeah, and they are fun because you can use during the day. You can aim it at the floor, and it'll tell you what's right under the Earth or up
on
in the sky
end
during
of the
day.
Earth.
Yeah, yeah. They'll just tell you that. And yes, they're very, very useful. Almost any astronomy event that I go to now, if there are kids there with their parents have those apps, and they're going, okay, look over there, and oh, now you can see this. And yes, it's a very nice way to look up at the sky and understand a bit of what you're seeing.
Burris emailed to say, I was very fortunate while serving aboard the USS Forrestal in the North Atlantic.
Uh-huh.
After flight operations for the day, from the flight deck, the night sky was amazing. You could see the stars all the way down to the horizon.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah, the only time I've experienced that is I lived in New Mexico for a year up in the mountains. And then also I've been to the sand hills of Nebraska. The stars are amazing there. But yes, I imagine out on the ocean, it would be phenomenal.
Oh, thank you very much for that email. Keith in Phelps, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Keith.
Hey, Larry. Saturday night, I got a call from my brother. And he told me, he says, go look out in the sky. So I went outside, and it was red, and it was going like north by northwest. And he told me that was the fourth one that he saw, and it was traveling roughly the same direction as the one that I saw. And I was wondering if your guest would have an idea what it was.
How fast was it going? How quickly did...
I guess in a span that I saw it, it probably took 3 or 4 minutes to disappear.
Okay.
Okay, and it was not blinking. It was...
Well, usually... Nope. Usually things that aren't blinking are satellites, but they're, to my knowledge, they're never red. You wouldn't be able to see the color red from as high up as they are. The only reason you see them is because the very bright sun is shining off their solar panels or some other very bright flat surface. So I'm going to say I have no idea what it was, except, and I'm probably wrong, one night I saw something and I'm like, what the heck is that? It was more of an orange. And I found out it was, and there were several of them. It was a project that some kids had made where they put a candle somehow in a paper bag suspended from something like a trash bag that the air heated up in the trash bag. It was basically a little hot air balloon, but it was high enough up that it was freaky what it was. And it, I didn't see this, but somebody said they once saw one of those and like, what is that? What is that? And somehow the parachute caught fire. So suddenly the thing became bright and plummeted to the ground. And well, I don't know what it was.
Oh, it was interesting though. And
it's kind of fun sometimes to not know, I think.
Keith, thank you very much for calling. Maybe some other people saw those as well. Yeah. We have the image of a super massive black hole that was taken in April.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest science stories ever. I mean,
wow.
They used the whole Earth as a telescope. Radio telescopes spread across the world worked together at the same time and in a way formed a radio telescope as large as the Earth by adding their information together. And then they use those signals to turn it into an image in light. But they did get the information showing that black hole with the ring around it, and they had made theoretical ones saying this is what we think it would look like, and it's pretty amazing. You can't really tell the difference. It looks exactly like they thought it was going to look. Some people might say, oh, sure, they made it do that. But no, it's true science. A couple of hundred people worked on this for years, and it is a black hole that is very far away. It's in a very, very big galaxy called M87, and we've known for a long time that it has a really big black hole in the middle of it. That's why they chose that one. They also imaged the black hole in the middle of our own galaxy, which is far, far closer, but also far, far smaller and less active. And to me, the amazing fact, I heard one of the scientists say, this image, the resolution, it would be like taking a picture of an orange on the moon, which is just, I mean, we can't get pictures. You know, people say, do we have pictures of the flag from Hubble? No, Hubble can't even come close to taking pictures of anything we left on the moon. Those things are just too far away for us to do that. And yet they did a similar thing with these radio telescopes. Amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Well, you've been, let's talk a little bit about what you've been doing with your portable planetarium. You had a busy summer.
Yeah, this was a very busy summer. I am finished now. I counted it up. I gave 58 presentations in my portable planetarium over the summer at 30 different libraries across the state. It was a very, very busy summer because of the anniversary. And because of the anniversary, this summer's library theme across Wisconsin was a universe of stories. And I work with kids during the school year too. I run a school age care program. I just love it. And every once in a while when they hand me a check, I feel a little guilty because if I could afford it, I wouldn't charge money. But yeah, very busy. I figure I reached about 2,000 people.
And you have, just for those who are wondering what the heck's it about and who haven't heard you before.
Yeah, I have a business. It's called Seeing Stars, and the website is seeingstarswi.wordpress.com, where you'll find out pretty much everything you want to know. And I travel around with a 16-foot wide, 10.5-foot tall inflatable planetarium. And we can see a couple thousand stars at a time in there. And I tell people we can go to the Amazon and the North Pole and winter, summer. I can show many, many things. And a lot of stories about the mythology of the constellations and things like that. So
pretty
fun.
Cool.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
Are you looking forward to any astronomical events in 2020?
Oh, well, there's a lot of science stuff that's going to happen. It's kind of amazing to me that they announced this recently. There's going to be a helicopter on Mars, and it's a little tiny helicopter. I found out it weighs 4 pounds, the whole thing, 4 pounds. The atmosphere of Mars is very thin, 1/100th as thick as ours. So getting something to fly there isn't that easy, but the propellers on it, the rotors, are large, and they spin very, very quickly. In fact, about two-thirds the speed of sound on the tips of them. They have to get it off the ground there. And it's only going to be able to take 90-second flights once a day, but it'll be able to go several hundred meters in those flights. It's mostly just an experiment to test out the technology, but it's pretty neat. I try to imagine being the scientists who proposed that, and then they were told, yeah, you can fly it. When? Next year. Holy moly. So usually they have to wait a long, long time. I'm sure they've been working on this a long time, but that's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. Then that's going to be on the Mars Rover 2020 mission, which will be launched next year. And it's one more exploring Mars mission. To me, I love these, you know, Opportunity, the rover that was supposed to last 90 days and lasted over a decade. It sent its last signals late last year, and that was kind of a sad day. And
yeah.
And yet it was a pretty cool day too, because it had traveled miles and miles and miles, and it had learned a lot. So there's exploration going on. There are more and more missions going to the moon. And, you know, every season there are things to see. We're coming up. I love the winter sky. It's just too bad it's cold, but I love the winter sky because Orion, the constellation Orion, is just beautiful and amazing, and there's so much to see in it. And the crisp nights, and it gets dark right after supper. So
yeah.
And night lasts a long, long time. So, yeah.
And what is the, what do we have? What's the furthest thing out there in space right now that we've sent?
Oh, well, that would be, what is it called? The Pluto mission, the mission. Yeah. Well, it's not the furthest, but it's the furthest that sent us back pictures. Right at the beginning of this year, it sent back pictures. You remember back in 2015, it sent those amazing pictures of Pluto. But it went by an asteroid that looked like a little snowman, two little they thought at first they were balls, but later they realized, no, they were kind of flat, that joined together, and they got some pictures of that very, very, very far away, much farther away even than Pluto. But I don't know if it's Voyager 1 or Voyager 2 that is the furthest thing. I think it might be Voyager 1, and they say it's kind of reaching the edge of the solar system. Sort of, but there are comets that are much, much farther out. But it's the influence of the sun and the particles it gives off, those have now been superseded by particles from interstellar space. So in a way, it's reached the edge. And it's still able to send that information back to us. And it was launched 43 years ago.
Yeah,
so that's pretty amazing. And it's still out there sending back signals.
I remember there was something about shields when they were making that. And I saw an interview with one of the guys that worked on it. And they were trying to figure out what they could add as a shield. And his wife said, well, what about aluminum foil? He went down to the grocery store.
Oh, my goodness.
And bought some aluminum foil.
Huh. Wow.
And
wow.
They put it in.
And yeah. And that, you know, that reminds me. I remember reading that the lunar module, going back to Apollo, it needed to be very, very light because getting the weight there would be very difficult. And it was made of such thin aluminum that they said if you dropped a screwdriver or something, it would go right through it. So a few pop cans thick. Just amazing. And if you see photos of some of them after they brought them back up from the moon, they had a lot of dents in them. You know, they'd just bump the wall and you'd bend it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
On that note, Paul, we are out of time. Thank
All right.
you.
Yeah,
this has
sure.
been fun.
Yes, it always is.
You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
I sure hope so, too. Thanks a lot.
And what's your website again?
It's seeingstarswi.wordpress.com.
Seeingstars.wi.
Nope, not dot. Just seeingstarswi. Oh, then the dot.
Then the dot.
Wordpress.com. But if you just do a search for Kinzer Seeing Stars, it'll get you there.
Thanks again, Paul.
Sure, bye-bye.
Appreciate it very much. Paul Kinzer, the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. I always enjoy having him here. I always learn something, and it's just a nice conversation. And I always enjoy having our weather guys come by as well. They come by the last Monday of the month, and they're up next to talk about all kinds of things relating to the weather. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.